Blog Talk Radio.
Spirit of Truth Ministry now presents The Bible on Trial, a show that tests the teachings of Christianity against the words and the teachings that Jesus Christ gave to his own eyewitness disciples while he was here on earth. Join us for a challenging and unique study into truth, justice, and the kingdom of heaven.
Oh, just got done pouring the final cup of coffee, and we are here at my kitchen table studio, getting ready to have another wonderful program, which we have called the Bible on Trial. That came from Dr. Rich Humpel, many, many years ago, who actually put this program on the air, and we are continuing with that love these many years. It's been 10 years, hasn't it? I mean, it's just amazing. My name is Dennis, and I am here with Dr. Don and Rick, and today is March 8th. 2019, and we are delighted that you've taken a few minutes out of your busy day to join us here on the Spirit of Truth Ministry radio channel on Blog Talk Radio. Our chat room is up. There you will find our official website at spiritoftruthministry.net and other important details about where you can find information about our ministry. Let's have prayer and we'll get started. Thank you, Father, for a wonderful day here in sunny Southern California. And it's a wet, sunny Southern California. Thank you for taking care of us as we search to discover the truth. And I praise your name in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. I think it is worth a couple of minutes. I'm doing this kind of put this on record. I first want to, oh, come on, baby dog. I can't let you do that. She has found a squeaky toy. No, you can't get up there. She's found a squeaky toy and she's going to keep that one going for as long as we're on the air if I let her. A friend of mine had a heart attack this week, Peter. And Peter Tupou had a heart attack. Yep. Yep. I'm going to, and as a function of that, I wrote today's piece that appears in on our Facebook page and also as the episode information for our program today. And I'm going to take just a couple of minutes while Rick finishes breakfast. And I'm going to read that to you.
Maggie, stop it.
She's going to get. It was a left descending partial occlusion, and he came very close.
So is he hospitalized?
No, he's at home. He's home. It's truly amazing. I've been through two of those, and I will tell you, it is truly amazing that people who should be dead are actually alive. So I'm going to read this to you. And it is a function of how I felt when I first heard that he had a heart attack. So Maggie, I'll get it.
Here, put it here.
I know, I'm going to put it out of reach after I get done. All right, here it is. We are not guaranteed our next breath. Last week, a good friend of my family had a massive MI heart attack. He's in his early 40s. Peter came home from an exercise session, and when Jolette saw him, she knew he was in trouble. She called an ambulance that came and collected him and took him to the same hospital where in years past I've had two interventions in the heart cath lab. He was saved by a wonderful medical team that placed a stent in his left descending coronary artery, widowmaker, and 3 days later, is at home resting and in recovery. He came close to dying. Very close indeed. Listening to Gillette describe this situation brings to mind how fragile our lives are and reminds me that eternity is a mere breath away. What will that eternity look like for all of us when the time comes for our transition? How does what we believe affect which side of eternity we are on? The idea that we can just leave our ultimate future to the chance that what we believe to be true is not, is more than most people want to contemplate. Yet, what we believe and how we believe actually matters in where and what we experience after our transition. And even if you believe that life does not exist beyond our current life, is it not incumbent upon us to live as honestly as we can while we share this life with this world? Self-honesty is the true key to a happy, joyful, and productive life because truth matters. The search for truth is the best gift we can give ourselves because it shapes every relationship we have with everyone we care about. When we find a part of that truth, the big picture, especially about salvation and eternal life, it is truly good for our heart, intellect, to find, that part of us which will last for eternity. Making time for the search for truth is critically important, both here in this realm and in the realm to come. Truth, no matter what.
Thank you, Dennis. Very well thought out and well put. As most of you know, I've been doing this study, research, putting the pieces of the puzzle together for over 25 years. In September, it will be 26 years. Although throughout my life, I have been familiar with the Bible and familiar with God, what I understand now and how I behave is different than it was 26 years ago. Many profound and wonderful revelations have come to me through the study, the research, the observations I have made. And I have often wondered how many answers must I have and be able to explain that will be enough for God to be able to do what God needs and wants and has always wanted to do. And the answer to that question may be obvious and it may not be. The answer to that question, most people believe, is not possible to know. The answer to that question exists in the Bible, but not obviously existing. The answer to that question must come from a diverse corpus of information. And an intellect prepared to receive it. I asked the question of Dennis this morning and of Don, and it was very encouraging to me to know that they too possess the tools. And why they didn't give the outright answer, they certainly were going down the right path. The question is, how is God?
And by the way, that's not how we feel. How are you today? And any throwaway line, it's how is God?
It is the question that if there is a, and I will say, I'm not going to say certain answer, I'm going to say plausible answer. Plausible. That means an answer that is, yeah, okay, I can see how that could be. That's a plausible answer. I will give credit where credit is due, but who I'm giving credit to does not even know the question. Really hasn't really considered the question, but has given me such valuable information that I've been able to give you this plausible answer. It comes from several pieces of the puzzle that I have been able to find their place in the picture, and it is possible that I have placed the last puzzle piece. Is it possible for mortal created human being who does not have access to the information that they would need to be able to answer this, how is God? The question is not, what is God? Or where did God come from? The question is, how is there a God? I have talked a lot about the magnetic universe, that as far out as the edge of the universe, if the edge of the universe exists, there is an edge that astronomers have found, but is that actually the edge of the universe?
Well, we now know that where the galaxy's edge is.
Well, the galaxy's edge is not the edge of the universe.
It's at Disneyland.
Thank you, Dennis, for that enlightening bit of knowledge. And as far as the universe goes, so do the lines of magnetism, which are the magnetic field. Dennis has brought up the fact of the unified field theory.
Mm-hmm. That Einstein was trying to make fit into gravitation.
You cannot arrive at a truthful answer without using the truth to arrive there. I have a brilliant daughter. Her intelligence amazes me. She, when we started her in first grade, at the age, or we started her in kindergarten actually, at the age of five, within 2 weeks, they wanted to move her to first grade. So I asked my five-year-old what she wanted to do. And I explained to her that the good thing is that she wouldn't have to spend as much time in school before she graduated. But she would typically be the youngest one in the class. My five-year-old thought about it and gave me the immediate answer. She was bored in kindergarten and she wanted to go to first grade. So she did, and she went immediately to the top of her class in first grade. They said they could put her in second grade, and I says, I think that's a bit much right now. When she was in fourth grade, she was on the aptitude test, I guess is, was like second year of college. She is an incredibly brilliant young woman. The reason I'm telling you this is that she had an experience in college that kind of helps define what I'm trying to say. My daughter had tutored in calculus, advanced calculus in high school. She was taking calculus in college because she wanted to be an engineer.
By the way, tutoring is not learning from a tutor. It is teaching as a tutor.
Yes. She was teaching students in calculus that were having difficulty with calculus. And her calculus teacher in college, it was her first semester of teaching in college. She had probably just graduated. And one Friday, she had one of those formulas on the grease pencil board up front that took up most of that board. She said, for extra credit, I want you to write down this formula. And of course the answer was at the end of what the answer to the equation, the formula, was there at the bottom, at the end of the equation. But it was the right answer, but if you worked out that equation, you wouldn't arrive at that answer. So what the teacher said is, here, there's something wrong with this formula. I mean, the teacher didn't even know what was wrong with the formula. When she had worked it out, she knew what the right answer was, but she did not arrive at that right answer. So she knew that there was something wrong in the equation. Some value had been entered that was incorrect. So she says that anyone who could figure out where the problem in the formula was so that you could arrive at that answer would get extra credit. My daughter, sitting there, raised her hand. And the teacher said, oh, Heather, you've solved the equation? She says, yes, down on line four in the, at the right there near the middle where the, you have entered such and such. I don't know what it was. It should be this number instead of that number. And the teacher looked and went, oh, yes. So my daughter got the extra credit. And she was the only one in the class that got the extra credit. Of course, that makes you very popular.
Not.
What I'm saying is that that's how the devil operates. He knows what the truth is. He knows the formula. And he knows the answer. The truth. What he does is in the formula, he inserts an incorrect value so that you know what the right answer is, and you know that the formula has been written down, the equation has been written down correctly. But somewhere in that equation is a value that is incorrect. So if you were to work out the equation with the values that have been entered, it would not give you the correct answer. But you go, well, it doesn't matter. As long as I know what the correct answer is, that's fine. But the problem is that you have to be able to work the equation to arrive at that answer. Just knowing what the answer is not enough.
I taught physical science for a while in high school and to freshmen. The reason why we teach physical science as opposed to hard science to freshmen is that they have no context. And so physical science is the groundwork, lays the groundwork for context so that when they get into the specific, for instance, biology or physics or chemistry or any of the other hard sciences, they have a place to put the information. And when we are working with formula, it does no good for a student to memorize a formula. What we of necessity must have our students do is to be able to derive a formula. For instance, deriving the formula for calculating the circumference of a circle. Okay, what is the constant?
Pi.
3.14159. All right. So how do you get that? I used string and pins. I had them put a circle. I had some plastic cups and paper and pencils, and I had them make a circle, draw a circle. And then I had them put pins in the circle all the way around. Then I had them put a string around it and mark where the string began and where the string ended. Then I had them stretch that string out and measure it. And then I said, what is the relationship between the outside of the circle and what crosses circle? And when you put it that way, these children, these ninth graders, each and every one of them was able to derive the formula for calculating the circumference of a circle based on the radius squared. All right. And derive the constant that what you must multiply the radius squared by in order to get the circumference. This is the same thing that you're talking about, Rick. If we don't know how, and you put it this way, you were saying, you've said for many years, how will we know when we have enough truth to be able to function inside of God's kingdom and get that kingdom organized here on the earth? And what you came up with just this week sounds to me like as if it's not, then we are awfully close.
Here's the thing, Dennis. Do you think that anyone who was not in the kingdom would be able to know the answer to the question I asked you this morning?
No, because they wouldn't be able to derive the formula based on whatever that was.
So I know I have you all sitting on the edge of your seat, right?
Well, I'm actually comfortably leaning back, but that's okay.
That's a matter of
A metaphor for it, yes.
I have been watching the videos on YouTube put out by Ben Davidson and Suspicious Observers. I have learned a tremendous amount of knowledge from the information presented in those videos. In fact, what I'm going to tell you today has come about with the help, a great help from the information in those videos. A couple of days ago, I've been watching, there's been a series that Ben Davidson has put out from various experts in various fields, as well as himself, talking about Earth catastrophe cycles. There are 20 videos dealing with various aspects of the Earth catastrophe cycles. And the primary driver of the catastrophe cycle that they are talking about is the sun. A micronova from our sun. And what it would do to the Earth, which is not, which I would say is a very unsettling fact. They offer that this is probably how the dinosaurs disappeared, or the great mammals around 10,000 years ago, 12,000 years ago. And I noticed that how they describe what happens to the Earth when the sun has a micronova sounds a lot like the trumpets of Revelation. I mean, when I say sounds a lot like the trumpets of Revelation, I'm saying
pretty much identical.
Describing what the trumpets are describing. In fact, on Catastrophe Cycle 20, which I think came out on last Thursday, left a comment, an observation. And I want to read what I left. And so far, there are 4 likes on that comment. In Revelation chapter 8, starting with verse 6, the 7 angels that had the 7 trumpets now made ready to sound them. The first blew his trumpet, and with that hail and fire mixed with blood. And what I put beside blood in parentheses was the word plasma, with a question mark. hail and fire mixed with blood were dropped on the earth. A third of the earth was burnt up, and a third of the trees, and every blade of grass was burnt. And then verse 12. The fourth angel blew his trumpet, and a third of the sun, and a third of the moon, and a third of the stars were blasted. Oh, I like that term. Do you know what a micronova is? A blasting charge of plasma that comes from the whole sun at sun surface or hotter temperatures. It is dust. You see, the sun is a giant magnet. The sun holds its plasma in its atmosphere through magnetism and magnetic fields. It's what holds the planets in their orbits as a magnetic field. It's what holds the galaxy in its position as a magnetic field.
And by the way, just an observation from a scientific standpoint, that is why, as brilliant as Einstein was, he was never able to find the unified field theory, because he was predicating everything on gravity and not magnetism.
And you see, this is the same understanding the scientific community is using today. They keep trying to find that piece of the formula that will make gravity, that will give them the right answer for gravity. So they look for dark matter. And everywhere they look, there is no dark matter.
Which is why it's dark.
But if they would use magnetism and magnetic fields, it would give them the right answer.
Can anybody
answer.
Say the word Tesla?
So the sun collects dust around it, and this dust circles around the sun like clouds. And you could think of a volcano that erupts. It ejects dust and ash high up into the atmosphere, which surrounds the earth. And what does it do to the earth?
Cools it.
Why? How does it cool it? It reflects the sunlight. Well, if the sun is surrounded by a layer of dust, what happens to the sun? Does it cool? Where does the heat come from that heats the earth, besides volcanism, magma under the earth? That's what helps to heat the earth. But what heats the earth? Well, it's got to be the sun,
right?
Because it's the heat from the sun that the volcanic ash and dust reflect away.
Which is one of the reasons why it is very apparent that there are two forms of light. One is particle and one is wave.
And clouds also cool the earth. How?
Reflecting the
heat from the sun. So if the sun is surrounded by dust, what happens to the heat coming off the sun? It's reflected
back into the sun.
So what happens to the sun? It heats up, and it gets hotter and hotter and hotter until
boom.
And that plasma wave blasts everything it comes in contact with.
And bye-bye satellites. Bye-bye whoever's in space, as long as they are in the way. I mean, if they're on the dark side of the earth at the time, maybe they'd survive.
Here's an interesting fact. There's a lot of people who argue the fact is whether we, the United States, ever actually and factually went to the moon. And I'm here to tell you, I know that we did. And I have no doubt that we did. And when I say I have no doubt, it isn't that I believe we did, it's that I know we did. Now, yes, there was at the same time that the Apollo was going to the moon, there was actors set up in a movie studio made to look like the moon. So you go, wait a minute. Why? Why would they have a setup at the same time with in a studio that would look like the surface of the moon and looked like they were on the moon, and they're taking movies of astronauts walking around on this? Well, what we know is that this, at the time, we were in, when I say we, this country was in competition with Russia to be the first ones to go to the moon. So if something happened that they weren't able to go to the moon, that would be kept hidden, and they would show the movie with the actors and so on the moon and say, we made it there. But Apollo actually made it to the moon, and the lunar lander landed on the surface of the moon. So they didn't need to use the movie set. That movie is there, and you can find it. And the director, what, I can't even remember the name of the director, but he was one of the well-known ones at the time. And he says that he, I did that.
So why did they do it simultaneously?
So they would have it immediately available if the Apollo capsule did not make it to the moon. They were going to
intercept.
They were going to show they made it to the moon, whether or no.
They did. Whether or not.
It was either going to be they were really on the moon, or they've got a movie that they offer as.
And it was going to be used only. It didn't matter if they got off the moon, as long as they landed on the moon. Now, they could have died there. There could have been, and they would have been feted as a, you know, they would have been honored and all that stuff. But if somehow they crash landed or somehow did an escape velocity and they were sent careening out into space or something like that, at that point, there was this entire setup that would have shown that they landed on the moon.
Yes. And of course, there was editing going on with the video feed from the lunar surface. My understanding is that the astronauts saw they were not alone. I'll just leave it at that. They brought back evidence from the lunar surface. That's how you know they went to the moon. How on earth can you get soil? It's not soil, but the material on the surface of the moon, how do you explain having that which you could only find on the surface of the moon? You cannot find it on Earth anywhere.
And we know that because we have space evidence that's on the Earth in the form of meteorites and residue that they actually compared the moon rocks to and found identical traces of elements that do not appear naturally on the
Earth.
They do not exist on Earth.
Now, here's the other thing they found in the moon dust. You've heard of moon dust?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what moon dust is? Glass. Mm-hmm. And wait a minute.
Silica.
How do you get glass? How hot do you have to heat it?
Sun temperature.
So what they're saying is the reason that the surface of the moon has this glass dust on it is because it was blasted in the past with a solar outburst. And the plasma, when it hit the moon, was hot enough to melt the lunar dust.
And by the way, you don't find the same surface on the dark side as you do on the light side.
Right.
It shows that the dark side was not blasted in with the same intensity because it does not have a glass coating.
Right. So why am I doing all of this? What does this matter? Isn't it all we need is the Bible? As long as I have the Bible, I have assurance of salvation. I don't need to know whether the sun is micronovaed or supernovaed or the magnetic fields or, you know, I don't need to know anything. All I need to say is, God, I believe in you and I love you and please save me when you return. Well, that would be nice if it were true. But then why would God need to give us any of the information that he's given us? Why would he have to explain in Revelation? Why would he have to explain the prophets? Why would he have to give us the law? Why would he have to bring his son into this world to testify to the truth if we didn't need to know the truth? The question I posed earlier, how is God? I would say that is probably the last question that one would need or want an answer to. And when I say, how is God? I don't even know how to put the question as it should be put. I'm not going to say, where did God come from? Because God has always existed. He didn't come from anywhere.
It's deriving the how.
You know, my dad, who was a minister for 29 years, told me that the atheist and the Christian could argue back to the same point and both would need faith. And the discussion back to the same point was, for the Christian, is where did God come from? Well, I don't know. You know, God's always existed. Well, how can you show that? I mean, define that. Well, I can't. How can you define God? So then the Christian would ask the atheist, well, where did everything come from? Well, the Big Bang, which incidentally has been mathematically and formulaically disproved. The Big Bang. Well, where did the dust come from? The Big Bang. Well, I don't know. Okay. So I can't tell you where God came from, and you can't tell me where the dust came from. And so we both have to have a certain amount of faith. My dad is asleep in death. I would love to have asked him this. I think he would have been amazed. God is a divine, I guess you will, or I say divine, a righteous consciousness. God is a spirit. And what is a spirit? We have a body. We have a body which allows us to interface and interact in this world. If we were just a consciousness, we wouldn't really be able to do anything. We might know a whole lot, but we couldn't do anything. We would just be aware. God gave us a body so that we could interface and interact with the world that he created, and we can plant and harvest and travel and work. We could do the things on earth that need to be done. We were not just consciousness. And as flesh and blood, we can also procreate. And that is a very profound process, which most people don't even think twice about.
Something Satan can't do.
Satan can't do. So, God, we know, is a conscious being, if you will. God is a consciousness that has always existed. And that consciousness as a spiritual entity is maintained in a magnetic field, or it maintains a magnetic field. It is highly possible that without the magnetic field, consciousness does not exist. So in the universe, what fills this universe, what has always filled this universe, is a magnetic field and electromagnetism, electricity and magnetism. They really can't exist one without the other. And that magnetic field has consciousness, and that consciousness is who we call God. God is connected to everything he has created because everything he has created exists in this magnetic field. He replicated his consciousness, Holy Spirit, and for their Son. And God took the perfect form. And when he created us in the image of that perfect form. And everything is held together in a magnetic field. So you can understand maybe now a little bit how God has informed us that righteousness and truth is not just something that he wants. It is something that he needs. Well, some say God doesn't need anything. That is an oversimplification that is absurd. If God didn't need anything, he wouldn't make such a big deal about what he needs. Sin, evil, wickedness, if it exists anywhere in the universe, it exists in the magnetic field, which is in God. I'm not saying in it's like an inflammatory disease, if you will. I don't know how to explain it. some would say a cancer. It's something foreign that should not be there.
You can kind of answer it. Can I answer what I think is a big question here? Obviously, CERN fits into this somehow. What can we tell our listeners out there about that?
Well,
they're looking for something.
Yeah, CERN has a lot to do with what the evil one does. And it's interesting that in order to make CERN work at the highest level that it can attain to is through magnets and magnetism and magnetic fields. So what I am saying is that when God puts everything right again, He cannot have anything in it that is still wrong. And what is wrong?
Not right.
It's that formula that has the wrong value that doesn't give you the right answer, even though you know the right answer. You need to see in that formula where the error is and remove it and put in the truth. The devil does not want you to know that. The devil doesn't want anybody to know that. And what the devil wants to do is control the narrative, to control the figures in the formula in such a way that you know the right answer. You just accept the wrong value or values that have been entered into the equation. And that's a lie, because you cannot get the truthful answer, even though you know it. You cannot get the truthful answer with wrong information. It doesn't work that way. You may know how a plane flies, but if the plane has not been put together the way a plane needs to be put together to fly, it will not fly just because it's a plane and looks like a plane. You won't even get off the ground. What the devil knows is that God will destroy everything that has been inserted into this universe, and it's here on Earth, it's not anywhere else in the universe, that does not operate truthfully and correctly. The devil knows what is going to happen to him and to his fellow insurrectionists. And he's ensured that he controls the narrative for humanity so that they will just follow along. And even when they're told the truth and shown the truth and given a plausible explanation for things, they will reject it purely for preferential reasons. gospel. This is the way I've always believed it, so it's good for me.
Give me that old-time religion.
As long as I have the answer, I don't need a truthful equation. What is the answer? The answer is not going to save you. It's the question that is asked correctly that will save you. The narrative is the question. If you say, well, I don't know where God came from, God has always existed, I can't explain that, but that's not for us mere mortals to understand. We just have faith that God exists. We can see the evidence all around. Yes, and it's like my dad said, you can argue with an atheist back to the point of the beginning where you both have to acknowledge that, well, you just have to have faith that that's the way it worked. But if you could give a plausible answer based upon evidence that exists today, that's better than saying, well, I don't know, but I just believe that it is. It, for me, this is what I, how I understand it. God will reveal us the answer to us up to and include his presence and how that is. But it takes a lot of work and it takes a lot of study. And what it takes most of all is a commitment to know the truth and how you arrive at the truth. You can't just take someone's word for it, no matter how much authority they appear to have, how much teaching and knowledge and understanding and learning and certificates and diplomas and licenses, everything. It isn't going to give you what you need if it isn't the truth. What we need is the truth. How we find it is the most important.
Thank you, Rick. Boy, that was really, wow, that was really something. And by the way, we're not done. We are going to be here tomorrow at 10 a.m. Pacific time, where we will continue this. And I encourage you to join us tomorrow and tell your friends. You can find us on Facebook at Spirit of Truth Ministry Group. You can find us on the internet at spiritoftruthministry.net. So on behalf of Spirit of Truth Ministry, this is Dennis wishing you all a good day. And we will see you tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time for another edition of The Revelation of Jesus. So long for now.